From WNYC New York Public Radio, I'm Leonard Lopate. This is just one segment of the Leonard Lopate Show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
On today's Please Explain, we will find out what it takes to be a professional quarterback from someone who never will be. But he is here with a Jets playbook, something I thought you couldn't own unless you were a member of the team. And he has his own jersey, a jersey that is red because when teams practice, the quarterback wears red so that nobody will cause him any harm. We thought that we would ask Harry Hurt III of the New York Times to tell us about his experiences as a Jets quarterback for at least one practice session. Later, we'll be taking your calls at 212-433-9692. You wrote an article in the Times about this experience. Were you inspired by George Plimpton's experiences when he tried out for the Detroit Tigers and wrote Paper Tiger?
Paper Lion, is actually.
Paper Lion. But, Detroit Tigers are a baseball team.
Yeah, right.
Well, he should have tried. I know he tried out. He played baseball as well and hockey and everything else.
Yes, he did. Yes, George was a friend of mine and also a friend of my wife's family. And the column I write, Executive Pursuits, is mainly inspired by him in terms of participatory journalism. George applied that concept mainly to sports. I apply it to sports and things ranging from getting custom suits to jewelry for my wife to flying airplanes upside down. So I broadened it. But this particular football piece was very much inspired directly by George. And the Jets owner, Woody Johnson, was a fan of George's. So that's sort of how I got to do it.
Well, I would assume that it takes some real pull to get that sort of thing because knowing what I know about some football coaches, most of them just would not countenance something like this. I can't imagine the Jets doing this when Bill Parcells was the coach, for example. In fact, I didn't imagine that Eric Mangini would do it. If you watch him on the sidelines of a game, he looks like he does not really have a light side.
He takes no nonsense, it would appear. But in fact, they call him Eric Mangenius, and he has a sort of playful side to him and a way to try and make things interesting. I think before they played the New England Patriots recently, which they won and beat in Foxborough Stadium up in Massachusetts, he showed a tape of the first Cassius Clay, as he was called then, Sonny Liston fight, which was a big upset. And so he's always pulling little stuff like that. When you go out on the practice field, they are playing rap music at concert volume and also rock music, and it often has a theme. For example, before they played Cleveland, they were playing Who Let the Dogs Out, and as you may know, at Cleveland they have this thing of the dog pound in the stand. So there's always a little touch of something there, and I think that's one of the reasons the players like Eric Mangini and respect him and play hard for him.
How much preparation did you need before you even attempted this? Did you go and watch game films and stuff like that?
Well, no. I got there at 6:45 in the morning and was fitted for a uniform. Then I went to a quarterback's meeting at 8 o'clock with Chad Pennington and the backups Kellen Clemens and Patrick Ramsey and offensive coordinator Brian Schottenheimer. They gave me this playbook that I brought. The difference is, and the reason I think I can smuggle this out, mine has only three plays in it, and they were the three plays that I ran. But they were a lot longer, most of them, in just calling the plays. For example, one is called Double Right, Gone Right, 444, 8 Swing Flat. And that's the name of that play. And you're supposed to say that twice in the huddle plus with the snap count. So I was put in the hands of offensive quality control coach Jason Michael, who actually helped me rehearse these plays at a desk, much like we're sitting at the moment. And I would go through the motions, if you will, and then also try to remember. It took me all day to memorize the three darn plays.
Well, those plays have complicated names. I'm assuming that they mean something to a quarterback, that they're not just gobbledygook. And I've always assumed that there are maybe 10 or 15 basic plays in football and everything else is wrinkles anyway.
Well, yes and no. I mean, in the NFL, of course, there's motion of the backs going in motion, and then there's changes at the line of scrimmage depending on what the defense does. The way these plays are organized are really in four parts, and that helped me learn them. The first part is the formation of the offensive line and the players. The second is the blocking assignment for the lines. The third part is pass receivers' routes, and the fourth part is for a running back. So, for example, Double Right, Gone Right, 444, 8 Swing Flat. Double Right is the formation. Gone Right is the...
Well, the Double Right meaning two pass receivers on the right side?
Well, you know, we didn't get in it that deep, but I think so. Hey, I'm just a dumb quarterback and a blonde one. But Double Right is the formation. Gone Right, and I have no idea what that is. That's a blocking assignment. 444, I can tell you, has nothing to do with running backs hitting holes. It's receivers formation. In this case, they were all button hooks. And then 8 Swing Flat meant that the halfback was supposed to swing out in the flat. There's also an audible call here, which I will not reveal because in case the Jets actually use it. But they use these plays a lot. I mean, one was just a simple draw play. Two other were pass plays. The second pass play they used quite a lot, which they hit Lavernius Coles on in the right left flank when the cornerback is playing off. So it was just so cool to do this. I just got to tell you, it was just the nuts. I mean, I flew an airplane upside down, a World War II airplane upside down back in April, and that's got to be the coolest thing ever. But boy, this sure ranks a close second.
My guest is Harry Hurt III, a columnist for the New York Times, who has been engaging in participatory journalism did a mock practice session with the Jets as the quarterback. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. And I would assume that if you really had any hopes of joining the team, you would have tried out for running back, where there is more of an opportunity to actually get a job.
Well, I don't know about that. The running backs are actually better than they may appear. They rotate them. It was kind of funny. On the first play was a handoff as a draw play, and my job
well,
was...
Well, you should explain what a draw play
okay.
is,
well,
because it's a complicated play.
Well, it is. It's what you're doing. A draw play comes in the context of you're pretending to pass, and instead you're going to run the ball. So what it does is it helps sets up future passes, if you will, and keeps the defense honest. So I was supposed
to... You're drawing the defenses in, and then the runner goes past it, or you can sometimes... You can pass the ball over the defenders' heads, can't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I think the draw is not so much drawing them in as to make them well, it is drawing them in a little bit because you're drawing them into the notion that they are defending against a pass instead of a run, so they will react in different ways that would be inappropriate to defending a run. And in this case, I was supposed to pretend I was passing. The fullback would go past me, and then I'd hand the ball into the belly of Leon Washington, who is the Jets' 22-year-old rookie running back from Florida State and has been a good performer. Well, I made the handoff, and gosh, you know, I thought I was really hot stuff because Plimpton had gone backwards with all his plays. Well, I get back to the huddle, and already Leon is coming back. Say, man, you don't have to lay it in there so hard. And I'm going, well, I'm sorry, man. I didn't know. You know, I didn't know my own strength, I guess, right? So he was somewhat upset that I put it in there too hard. I've watched films of this a few times, and I can't imagine that a 55-year-old geezer like me could possibly hurt a 22-year-old running back from Florida State by sticking a pigskin in his gut. But there it is. I told Coach Mangini that maybe my friend Leon should do a few more crunches in the exercise room.
Did you get to throw the ball?
I did. I got to throw the ball twice. The second play was basically a button hook type patterns to the right. What happened there, and all this will be described, by the way, point by point tomorrow in the New York Times, and also on the Times website we'll have an 8-minute video. But the second play was our double right, gone right, 444. H swing flat, and what all that boiled down to was there, I had a bunch of guys doing button hooks sort of over the middle and down the right side, and I got back, and of course this was not only the first pass of my NFL career, short-lived though it may be, but the first time I'd thrown a pass in pads since the ninth grade. I played some touch football, but nothing in pads, and it's a little bit different motion if you've got those shoulder pads on your shoulders and all that. But in this case, the real impedimenta, if you will, were the linemen in front of me, most of whom are 6'4 or 6'5. I'm 6'2, but within the helmets on and all that. And I just frankly lost sight of my receiver, or my intended receiver, button hooking over the middle, so I just threw the ball away. So at least it saved an interception.
Our number here is 212-433-9692 if you'd like to join in this conversation. Well, that's one of the reasons that quarterbacks are taller and taller, and why quarterbacks like Doug Flutie, who is short, had real problems throughout their career. It was feared that they wouldn't be able to see those pass receivers over the heads of the offensive linemen and the very tall defensive linemen.
Right.
But 6'2 is not unusual.
Yeah, no, I you know, I guess I'm just whining here. But
did you know that you could throw a spiral?
Well, yes, I knew I could throw a spiral from touch football, and I got a chance to throw a little bit of warm up on the sidelines before I went into the to call the plays with the team. Not that many, maybe 10 or 12 passes, but I knew I could throw a spiral, and generally I could see a way. On this first play, my primary receiver was button hooking over the right side, was a tight end, basically in the center of the field. I had a wide receiver who was supposed to do a very long button hook, and the idea was that if the defenders grouped on my primary receiver, the tight end, that would open up a line of sight as well as an open throwing lane to the wide receiver streaking down the right side, who in this case turned out to be Brad Smith, a very gifted athlete that plays for the Jets. Unfortunately, I was so darn nervous, I just threw the ball away. I mean, you know, come on, right? It's my first pass as a pro.
They're not going to respect your leadership qualities if you just throw the ball away the first time. And I've always wondered about that. A quarterback comes in, this is the first time he's ever played in a game, and he screws up the play. And then you wonder whether they're going to trust him when they get back into the huddle for the second play.
Well, you know what? I didn't have time to wonder that, you know, because I had to call the next play. And if I'd thrown an INT or an interception, I think I would have been dissed a lot more. But I was already getting a hard time from the defense. They were catcalling me and say, come on, number zero, let's get it on. And we got to – this was their bye week, I should mention. So what that means is they didn't have a game the following Sunday. This would have
so
been
on – so they could mess around for a little bit.
For a little bit. But they were also about to take a 4-day vacation. And these were the last plays to be run in practice prior to their vacation, so some of them were anxious to go. However, I did redeem myself on the third play in a dramatic fashion. That one was another pass called flank right, quick ace right, 321 F flat. And
you remembered all of that, and you had to say that twice.
Yeah, and say that.
Why do you have to say it twice? So the both sides can hear it?
So that the guys get it, the guys in the huddle. And then what you also do is usually in touch football, you'd say, all right, we're going to do it on one, and you'd go out and go hut one, hut two, or something like that. In the pros, you don't do that. You go by, it's so loud, you go by what they call second sound or first sound. So mine were all on second sound. So when I would go up under center, I would, and I'll try to keep this down, but I would scream, set, hut, and then the ball would be snapped. So I would say in the huddle, I would call this play that I just called and say second sound, and then and go ready, and then they'd all clap their hands and we'd break. So that was the thing. But this one I also had going on here. I had headsets in my helmet, just like the real quarterbacks do.
Who talks to the quarterback during a game? Is it different people?
Hopefully not. It's hopefully one voice. It's generally the offensive coordinator or whoever plays that role. Sometimes coaches are the offensive coordinator de facto or not, but generally it's the offensive coordinator. And what he will do is actually call the play for you as you go back into the huddle. Although, again, it's still his guy's rasping in your ear. It's sometimes hard to regurgitate what he just said. In this case, it's kind of an interesting play, this flank right, quick ace right, because on this one, my primary receivers were basically running little out patterns out in the right side. However, if I got up to the line of scrimmage and looked at the left side flanker, who in this case turned out to be Justin McCarron, and saw that the defender in front of him, the cornerback, the opposing cornerback, was what they call laying off. In other words, playing back several yards rather than playing up close. I was supposed to forget about the guys on the right and immediately throw it to him. And in fact, as I approached the line of scrimmage, Brian Schottenheimer, the Jets offensive coordinator, was going, all right, and they call this the big alert. So he says, the cornerback's laying off, go to the big alert. Cornerback's laying off, go to the big alert. And I thought that was kind of cool. You know, so I gave some head fakes in both directions as I was standing over center, and I got the ball off. I looked at it. It seemed like more of a wounded duck when I threw it, but it seems to spiral on the videotapes, and the guy caught it.
And a listener, Mark, in fact, asks, because he sent this by email, who threw a better deep ball, you or Chad? No offense to the amazingly accurate Pennington, but to use the old cliche, I think my 5'1" girlfriend could throw further than him. Just wondering if that's true.
No, come on, that's not true.
Well, that's what a listener asked.
I know, all right.
Although the accuracy is a problem, too, because he, except for last week's game, he's thrown more interceptions than he's probably ever thrown in recent years, at least when he's been able to play.
You know, one of the things that impressed me most about this is how difficult the job is. And we have in the lexicon, of course, the Monday morning quarterback, the name for a second guesser. And in fact, there is so much going on and so many things to remember that the job is much more difficult than it appears. In terms of, I can't throw it that far. I mean, myself, Chad, I think, is still, in terms of the distance of his throwing, feeling the effects of the rotator cuff injuries that he sustained over the last few seasons, two of them, in fact. And it's remarkable that, in fact, he can come and play at all. I've had some rotator cuff problems myself, and I had to stop lifting weights for 2 years before my rotator cuff began to heal. So I can be very sympathetic and also empathetic with that.
And a quarterback has to memorize a lot of plays. Are they the intellectuals of the team, or is it the offensive linemen, as newspaper reporters seem to suggest?
Well, on the Jets, have a particularly talented and bright offensive lineman named Pete Kendall, who is a veteran there and is very articulate and very quotable and very thoughtful in his quotes. I think, you know, that the quarterbacks have to do quite a bit of memorization and then also adjustment under pressure. In fact, after the scrimmage, Coach Mangini came up to me and he said, well, you know, how was it learning the three plays? And I went, oh, gosh, it took me all day. He says, well, now, can you imagine having to know over 100 of them and then plus putting in motion and all that thing? The other thing is there are a lot of subtleties in playing quarterback that have to do with leadership and sort of thinking on your feet. One particular specific example, we were watching game films of the Jets' first 8 games, and there was a position in which Chad, or a play on which Chad was back to pass, his receivers were covered, and he decided to scramble. And as he decides to scramble, he goes, as the offensive coordinator say, he took a look at where the first down markers were. In their lexicon, it took a peek at the sticks. And it was just this little subtle move so that he knew exactly where he had to go. Well, gee, that seems sort of obvious. Hey, think about that under pressure. You have to be schooled to do that under pressure and to be mindful of doing that. You know, Chad was very gracious to me. In fact, we're all the players, with a few exceptions that were just sort of teasing me pretty hard. At least I think they were teasing me. But he's got a tough job, and maybe his arm will start to get a little stronger as the season progresses.
We're going to take a little break and then take some listener calls. Our number is 212-433-9692. We're talking about playing in the NFL at the quarterback position as today's Please Explain subject. We're back with Harry Hurt III of the New York Times, who tried his hand at being a quarterback for the Jets. don't know whether he's a Jets fan and whether he would have done the same thing with the Giants, who are looking for a new quarterback.
You remember the Broadway play West Side Story, of course, when you're a Jet all the way from your first cigarette to your last dying day. Well, I'm a Jet all the way from my first complete pass to my last dying day. So, unless I get a better contract from somebody else.
Spoken like a true professional. 212-433-9692 is our number. Andrew from Astoria. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, Andrew.
Oh, great show.
Well, thank you. What do you want to talk about?
Well, it just brings back memories when I was in high school. I was a quarterback for my high school team out in Long Island. And we used to say, Lenny the Nudist, Lenny the Nudist.
Oh, that was great. And we thank you so much for sharing that. I thought quarterbacks were smart, didn't you?
Sometimes.
Do quarterbacks tend to have played quarterback all their lives?
Yes, and generally they have, although it's quite interesting. I was talking to someone about what makes a football player, and generally the football players, the guys that are little kids and grow up to become football players, with the exception of quarterbacks, are usually the mean, tough ones that want to tackle and block, which is not always the case with the quarterbacks. There might be a few exceptions. If you remember Jim McMahon, who played for the Bears a few years ago, he was a pretty tough guy. Donovan McNabb is a tough guy. And so you've had this generation of quarterbacks that are really tough and that, you know, that really run. But in general, yes, because it is a skill position, and it involves throwing is the real thing.
And we're seeing larger and larger guys. Yeah. Vince Young looks like a tight end. He's huge and very strong, and he can run as well, and before him, Michael Vick, they can run as well as they can throw.
Well, he's great. I don't know if you saw the USC-Texas game.
I did.
Well, I'm actually from Texas. I didn't go to the University of Texas, but a lot of my friends did, and I'm a big fan. And boy, it was like he won that game almost single-handedly at the end. And he reminded me, the only other quarterback that I've seen that was like that I remember at that age and stage of their career, was John Elway. And the first time I saw John Elway playing at Stanford, I thought, well, this is like some varsity player playing against eighth graders. It looked, the contrast between the way he would move and handle himself on the field, and the same thing with Vince Young. I think Vince Young is got a chance to even go beyond Elway, quite frankly. He's a very fine young man, and he is inspirational to his teammates. If you saw him on the sidelines there at the Rose Bowl, you know what I'm talking about. And then look at him when they beat the Giants the other week, you know? Same thing. I mean, what? They came back and they scored, what was it, 24 points in the last 10 minutes of the game?
John from Paramus, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, it's a great show as usual. My original question was, what kind of shape did you get in to do this? But I also found it interesting, the genetics of quarterbacks with all the Mannings, the father and the two sons became quarterbacks. And I live in Jersey where Phil Simms' son is a quarterback for his high school team. In fact, they're playing for the state championship tonight. His other son was a quarterback, and of course, Phil was a quarterback.
Right. Well, I guess it runs in the family. My father was not a quarterback. To answer your original question, I do all these crazy things all the time, so I have to kind of stay in pretty good shape. I usually go to the gym about 5 days a week, but prior to this, for example, among the things I've been doing, I did a self-defense class. I went rock climbing. I went surfing. I went sailing. So I've got, you know, I'm usually okay. I'm not in professional athlete shape. Years ago, I did play professional golf for a brief period, and I was in kind of game shape, if you will.
Golfers have to be in good shape?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And
even the guys with the big bellies?
Well, there are few of those left, those guys with the big bellies. Craig Stadler may be one of the few enduring exceptions to that rule. In fact, you know, they talk about it starting with Tiger Woods. It really went back to Gary Player, but with the advent and dawn of the Tiger Woods era in 1997, you don't see guys that have big bellies much anymore out there, and especially the young kids are very strong. Some may be stocky, but they are not the sort of overweight. They're not Jackie Gleason, let's put it that way.
But John's other question about these families of quarterbacks brings something else to mind. I suspect that if you're a quarterback's kid, people will automatically have you play quarterback. And there are differences in personalities. We see a big difference between Archie, Peyton, and Eli Manning. Eli Manning seems to be a rather quiet young man, whereas Peyton is a very is a gregarious kind of man, and maybe that has had some effect on the way they have approached their jobs as quarterbacks.
Well, I think undoubtedly it does. I think, you know, one thing is that Peyton is the more physically gifted of the two. He's bigger. I think he's 6'5", 230. He is more outgoing, as you noted. I think it's a double-edged sword to have that legacy to live up to. And one of these commercials, and I think it may be an NFL commercial, there's a thing where Peyton mentions, well, when they stop calling me Archie's son, you know, was a big time for him. I don't know when they're going to stop calling Eli Peyton's brother or Archie's son. Perhaps never. Peyton Manning is Peyton Manning now. That's a big difference.
Did they teach you how to read defenses? Or is that was that way beyond the little bit of training you got to do
that
this?
Was generally beyond the purview of what we were doing in one day. I mean, you also got to think, I mean, this was like dog years, this one day. And I saw so many different things and brought up so many issues from the sociological to the athletic. But I did have to read the defense on the last pass play, and the read.
And you completed that one.
And I completed that one, and I was assisted, as would happen in the game, by coming up to the line. The offensive coordinator, you know, called my attention to the fact that the cornerback was laying off the flanker on the left side. So I didn't have to call an audible, but this play has got sort of a built-in audible. You just go to that if that's it. And you see that play completed quite a lot to Lavernius Coles on the left side. It's that sometimes the commentators refer to it as a slant route. It's just a little short thing, and if the cornerback is playing off, they get it to Lavernius. He tries to make yardage after the catch. If the cornerback dares to play up close, then, you know, hopefully Lavernius will burn them with the speed, and that's where a little bit the strength of Chad's arms comes into play in perhaps not the best way. So
my guest is Harry Hurt III. We're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. On today's Please Explain, we're talking about the playing professional football and being quarterback. We've had a number of quarterbacks on this team of on this game, on this show.
Oh, you have, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
well, but old timers.
Like,
well,
who? Well.
Well, Y.A. Tittle, I can't get much better than that.
I'm
right?
Following in the tradition of Y.A. Tittle. I'm honored.
Allie Sherman, who was a
great
Giants
coach
yeah. and also had played, was a left-handed quarterback at Brooklyn College. I don't know if you knew that.
I didn't know that.
That's when Brooklyn College still had football. We've had a few others, and their names are escaping me, but Y.A. Tittle was a thrill for me because he is a Hall of Fame quarterback. And one of the only quarterbacks who ever was as successful as he was, bald.
Well, I was about to, and I'm losing my hair. So, yeah,
so he must have been an inspiration.
You must be reading my mind here.
Number 212-433-9692. Tim from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, love the show, guys. I was living in Chicago a few years ago when Jim Harbaugh was the quarterback for the Bears, and I happened to bump into him, and I'm sitting there, I'm looking at him, and he just looked like any other average guy. And it rings to me. What's your thought on the height of a quarterback? I'm about 5'9.5". And
sounds like a pass defender. You know, this doesn't sound like a defensive back to me.
Yeah, you may be stuck there, or else running back. You know, the quarterbacks have gotten taller, as have all the players and the linemen in particular. I think it's pretty difficult to play in the NFL at that height. Remember, the Dallas Cowboys used to have this little guy, Eddie LeBaron, that played with Don Meredith, and they used to alternate. And I don't think Eddie was about that height. I think he was about 5'8 or 5'9.
And that was the big rap on him, and he was a great quarterback. I guess you can get around it if you have the skills. Then
yeah, on the high school and maybe some of the lower college level. And Flutie did very well in the Canadian Football League. So, you know, it's possible. In the NFL these days, you know, quarterbacks still have to be quite durable. It's tough to play, and that's probably why Jim Harbaugh, looking so, I mean, I remember, I believe he was at Michigan. He's not an NFL quarterback of note, so that's maybe you answered your own question.
David from Brooklyn, hi, you're on. Please explain.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question is, how many yards did the pass go for?
That's a good question. We made about 7 yards, actually, and so combined with about 5 yards on the running play, we had a comfortable first down. So, you know, I know when...
Of course, it was against the Jets' defense.
Well, okay, look, you know, I'm going to bring some of this gangrene in here if y'all keep talking that way. Now, come on, these guys, I went around there trying to make friends with them, you know, and you guys now know it was a tenacious defense, and we were lucky we could do it, and it was only through the skill of Justin McCarron's, my trusty wide receiver, that I was able to make a putative first down.
Go ahead. You have anything else you want to say, David?
No, that was it. Congratulations on your first down.
Thank you.
And they didn't let you do a second one. That was it?
Well, the 3 plays, yeah, that was it. Although there's rumors that I might get called back. You know, it just depends.
If they have another bye week this season.
Oh, they could.
Fred from Manhattan.
Lenny the Nudist.
You know, the screeners really have to be a little more careful on the silly people.
Yeah.
I guess we should not talk about sports because it brings out the crazy people. Did you ever think about that? I mean, you go to the games and you do see these people who have colored themselves in green or in orange and blue, and it's 20 below and they're not wearing their shirts. And you have to wonder what it is about sports that does that to people.
Yeah, I don't know, and I wonder about Mom and Dad there, and did Mommy and Daddy really love me enough? I mean, wow. They really need to kind of, you know, get a life. I think, you know, it's always, when you play the game and you play sports, you can get very wrapped up in it and involved in it, but at the same time, the key to winning, and Tiger Woods is a very good example of this. We've seen him pump fist and all that, but it's also to not get too low or too high and not too crazy. So, you know, next time Tiger Woods comes out wearing a multicolored afro and body paint, then maybe I'll change my tune.
Actually, football has changed a lot in terms of respect and racial lines. I remember years ago there were no black quarterbacks and there were no black middle linebackers because they often called the plays on the offense and the defense. And now the, you know, both positions have a fair number of African Americans. Even now, some of the most successful coaches, even though there are people who feel there should be more, but some of the most successful coaches are African Americans as well. Did you have a sense that this was a racially blind team?
Good question. I think, and I would have to try and give a considered answer to that. I don't think, racially blind in a certain sense. I mean, in this case, the three quarterbacks are white. The defender who calls the defensive alignment, Jonathan Vilma, is in fact African American, is a former Pro Bowler. I didn't feel that there was any sort of prejudice that way. One gets a sense that sociology does trump everything in certain ways, and so that, you know, I could feel some, let's say, racial divides among the team or different things like that. But in general, I don't think that there was a prejudice or a feeling that say, African Americans were getting short shrifts or whites were getting preferential treatment. And in fact, with the Jets especially, I felt a lot of sort of team camaraderie. Justin Miller, who's one of the cornerbacks and a star kickoff returner, was teasing me that he was going to blitz, and he was calling over to Chad Pennington and saying, "Come on, Chad, we're going to show him how to do the quarterback slide," and we were dancing around there. So it was kind of convivial that way.
Well, the Jets' previous coach was Herman Edwards,
right,
who was
exactly
African-American. And I guess that – and he only had white quarterbacks.
Yeah, yeah.
Paul from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Leonard. Thanks for taking my call. Big fan. I started listening to the interview after it started, so I hope I'm not asking a question that's already been answered. But I was wondering about the difference between...
Recaps are good, by the way.
Oh, great. I was wondering about the difference between, say, the era of, like, Roger Staubach, Terry Bradshaw, and today, how much difference there is as far as the control they had in calling the plays. You know, today we have the era of wireless communications in the helmet and communication back and forth from the sideline.
Well, I think, you know, in terms of control, they probably got to call more of their plays than is the case now, but that's certainly a double-edged sword. And in my own case, I was delighted to have the backup of Brian Schottenheimer barking in my ear, and I'm sure Chad is from time to time. Among other things, what it gives you is a second outside perspective. That call is either coming from somebody on the sidelines or up in the press box, so they're given an added view.
Although some quarterbacks are given more leeway than others.
Some more than others. I mean, it's so complicated. irritated. You sort of almost like, well, gosh, somebody's on the same page as me.
Harry Hurt III's article on his experiences as a Jet quarterback will be in tomorrow's New York Times.
That's right.
And I want to thank him so much for participating on today's Please Explain. This is New York Public Radio, WNYC. On Monday's show, celebrity chefs Daniel Boulou, David Chang, and Gabrielle Hamilton share some of their trial-by-fire cooking stories. Plus, Swanee Hunt, the daughter of the conservative oil tycoon H.L. Hunt, talks about how she became a progressive philanthropist. And we will take a look at a new collection of the formative films Ernst Lubitsch directed in Berlin. By the way, if you've missed something on the show or just want to hear something again, you can listen to archives of past programs at WNYC.org. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Sarah English, Brenna Farrell, and Blake Neshek. Melissa Egan is the executive producer. We had help from Jennifer Keeney-Sendro. Debbie Daughtry was at the audio controls, and I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. And we will see you on Monday. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening to the Leonard Lopate Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.